The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, today with Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Chenoweth, who are joining me here in the studio to talk about the Urbana-Champaign Indie Media Center and the Indie Media Center in general. I should let our listeners know that this is a pre-recorded show. We taped this and we brought Sasha and Danielle into the studio a couple of weeks ago, so this is not a day to call in. Just sit back and relax and let us take over and enjoy yourselves. First of all, Sasha, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Indie Media Center, its history here in Urbana and Champaign, and sort of what the news is there, if you would.
Sure. Well, the Indie Media Center phenomena, the movement, began in Seattle in 1999 at the World Trade Organization, had a meeting there, and there were a huge amount of people from all over the nation came to protest against the policies of this transnational organization. And one of the things that happened was that the protesters there decided that, you know, the media coverage of this event would be very biased in terms of, you know, what was being covered, how the protests were being covered, the amount of information that was being disseminated in terms of why the protesters were there. And so a large group, several hundred people, came together and created a media center of the people, of people on the streets, of people that, you know, would come together and disseminate this information. From this idea, this single independent media center, when people left Seattle, they brought this idea back to their own communities. And we had a group of about a dozen folks from Urbana-Champaign that went out to that first independent media center.
Were you one of them?
I was not one of them.
How about you, Danielle, our other guest here?
I was out there, and we flew about 12 to 15 people out of there with the generous contributions of people in the community who helped us get out there and report on from the ground on those protests.
Yeah, I should say that Danielle Chenoweth is a bit of biography. You are the member of the Urbana City Council, is that right?
That's correct, Ward 4.
Ward 4. And Sasha Meinrath, you are a co-founder of the Indie Media Center with Danielle, and a graduate student, soon to be in the Institute of Communications Research at the University of Illinois.
Yes. Yeah,
department, so will be editorially out in the open that I'm a faculty member in, so people know what's going on. So you were there, you came back, you were part of the crowd in Seattle. We saw what was going on. We're energized by it, Danielle?
Yeah, I actually was traumatized and energized. I saw police beat people in a way that in my lifetime I had never seen. And I actually still have nightmares about some of the things that I saw there. I was also energized because I walked into an independent media center there, didn't know what that was, and saw a number of people rushing around, working on computers, started asking questions and found out that they were taking the video, the photos, and the print pieces that they had gathered from the street, and they were uploading them simultaneous with the protests. And so people were kind of flocking to this independent point of view or points of view on the web at the time and getting a different, very different kind of story about what was going on in Seattle than what was going on, say, through MSNBC or CBS, et cetera.
Any idea? Now, this is going all over the world then on the internet. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the joys of the internet. Any idea how many people were visiting or hitting, whatever the vernacular is, the websites?
I've talked with a bunch of the techies that put together this website, and it was a constant battle to keep up with the demand placed on the server. Low estimates are somewhere around 1.5 to 2 million visitors, individual visitors. Probably more about 3 or 4 million over the course of one weekend.
That's absolutely astonishing. I mean, I've never, and that was the opening. That was the birth then of the indie media movement.
And originally, this indie media center was set up for this one occasion, but then they never shut it down. And from this one, I mean, it used to be that indiemedia.org, the website, was just the Seattle Independent Media Center. Now it's a global consortium of over 100 independent media centers in close to 50 cities worldwide.
How many of those 100 are in the United States, roughly?
About 35.
So it's one-third U.S.-based at this point, and Urbana-Champaign being one of those 35. So after 1999, a bunch of Urbana-Champaignians came back from Seattle, sort of traumatized and inspired by the IMC, said, this is something we ought to have here. This is a really cool thing. Is that more or less what happened?
Yeah, actually, we watched independent media centers proliferate throughout the nation and the world after Seattle. A number of us, about a dozen, went to Washington, D.C. and participated more closely with the independent media center there. for the D.C. protests against the World Bank and IMF. That was April of 2000. Mm-hmm. And then I think the Octopus actually at the time was talking about closing down. And so there were these kind of different forces coming together, some experience on the ground here from the community going away and coming back, and then seeing some of our own independent media here kind of start shutting down. And so we met on September 24th of 2000 in my living room. There's about 15 or 20 of us, and mm-hmm. we wanted to do a local report on local protest, solidarity protests with protests in Prague against the mm-hmm. World Bank and IMF, which was September 26th of 2000. And so, you know, 2 days before the local protests, we got together, shared all our media equipment with one another, gave each other short training sessions, and went out to the streets on the 26th and covered that. And that was our first coverage of a local mm-hmm. protest. From there, we just grew.
Now, what is the web address for those who listening who want to sure check out the local Indie Media Center that don't even know how to get to it on the internet?
You can point your browser at www.ucimc for Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center.org.
That's it. It's ucimc.org. Mm-hmm. And for listeners, if you get our weekly updates, we send an email. This will be on your weekly update. And for those of you who do not get weekly updates from Media Matters, all you have to do is go to my website or the WILL website. My website's just robertmcchesney.com or the WILL website, and there are easy guides there to click, so you'll get a weekly email. And one of the things the weekly email we send out does is it includes the information, bibliographical, websites, books, articles of our guests, so you don't have to write this stuff down if you're interested in our guests. And it also tells you who our upcoming guests will be. So the website again is
www.ucimc.org.
Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center.org. ucimc.org. Okay, I'm slow on this. That's why I assume my listeners share my slowness sometimes on these matters. So you started up, and it's basically internet-based, is the idea, that you take advantage of the internet technology to inexpensively be able to distribute it.
That's how it started, was this idea of utilizing the internet, utilizing virtual spaces to come together to create systems of communication and information dissemination. Our IMC and now an increasing number of other IMCs have now gone into in vivo, real-world spaces. So now we have a community center that we've set up, and we do everything from
in vivo. I like this. This is very cosmopolitan.
Right.
Getting academic here.
Right. Yeah. Right. Really. Is that Latin or something, or French?
But we now run everything from an art gallery out of our space. We had a shows venue, performance venue that we were having open to the community. We have meetings in the space. We do production of everything from video, where we put that on the Urbana public access television. We have a weekly radio show. We do monthly newspaper. I mean, we're sort of in most media that you can think of. Like, we have at least one finger or two.
So obviously you're not defined by the technology.
Right.
The technology is just a vehicle for a broader project. Mm-hmm.
And I want to explain that it's not the same group of people that's putting out these different media types. It's we have a working group structure where we might have anywhere between 5 and 25 people in a group, and they act as a kind of editorial board to create, put out the newspaper, put out the radio show. And there's quite different groups of people who end up coming through our space and producing media. We have people as young as 13 years old mm-hmm. producing media, some of them for national syndication. Mm-hmm. And then we have people in their 70s as well.
And they're all attracted by the high salaries, I suspect, that are right. being paid there. Is that right?
Yes, it's a 100% volunteer-run organization.
I was being facetious, but the point is that people are interested in doing media, learning about media, getting mm-hmm. involved. They can come down and actually just walk into the headquarters mm-hmm. in downtown Urbana.
Yes.
And you aren't going to throw them out or give them a multiple choice test. Mm-hmm. You'll bring them in and say, come on in, let's work together.
Yeah, we usually use the word stories, and that makes it a lot more user-friendly for people. You're not really – we talk about the Independent Media Center, but really we're just asking people, hey, do you have an interesting story? Have you opened the News Gazette recently and noticed that there was some aspect of your life that was not represented there, something that you expected to be part of the mm-hmm. local discourse that's not there? If so, come and produce it, and we'll, you know, create a venue for you to tell your truth.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does the IMC run locally? I mean, you two are both listed. You've told me you're the co-founders, and you're on the nominal board, but the board doesn't really have much legal power or power. How does that work, Sasha?
Well, as Danielle mentioned, we have these working groups, which are sort of small groups, or some of them are not so small, groups of individuals who are focused on a single project or aspect of media production. Each of these groups sends at least one representative, sometimes two, to what we call a steering group. It's a group of folks that, you know, sort of coordinate and communicate amongst the different aspects of the IMC. And that's also open to any member of the IMC to join. So you don't have to be a representative. You can just show up. And then we make decisions through a consensus-based process where when an issue comes up, we define how to deal with this issue or what sort of proposal we want to address, and then we consensus upon, you know, the next forward action of this. And it's a very different, I think, structure in that people can be involved at multiple different levels, any level of the organization that they want to be involved in. And it's based on sort of a covenant, if you will, of trust and respect for the other members of the organization.
And it seems to be working pretty well so far.
Yeah. I actually think that this kind of organization allows us to proliferate and grow at a very rapid pace. It's an amoeba-like, very low-to-the-ground grassroots structure, whereas I've seen other organizations that I very much supported in town kind of, you know, have to get their bylaws together and their mission statements and slowly grind forward, and nothing can happen without board consent, and everyone's always coming back to the board, but the board only meets once a month. Our working groups meet as often as they need to meet, and the board doesn't direct that. They just have to communicate with one another in their basic mm-hmm. ground rules. So it allows for this kind of flowering out of the ground of all kinds of projects. And in fact, one of the things we're struggling with right now is that we've overflowed our boundaries. We've overflowed our space. We've had to shut down our music venue because of just growing too fast and not having all of the pieces organized. I think that's a good thing in some ways, even though we have a temporary setback at this current time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. This is Media Matters you're listening to. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our guests that you've been listening to are Danielle Chenoweth and Sasha Meinrath, two of the co-founders and two of the people heavily involved with the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. This is a pre-recorded show. We did it a few days before going on air when we could get Sasha and Danielle in the studio. So please don't call in today. Just sit back and relax, kick back. Now, I get the chance to do a lot of traveling and do a lot of media stuff as part of my job. And so I get a sense of the phenomenon of indie media centers and how they're growing around the country. But one thing that has always struck me when I return here is it strikes me, certainly on a size for the size of this community, this Indie Media Center has really sunk in pretty deep roots compared to most of the other IMCs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if there's some sort of statistical measure in terms of volunteer hours or anything, but mm-hmm. it strikes me that this has really been quite the success story for IMCs.
Well, we have an active membership, people that are actively supporting in one way or another the IMC of close to 200 people. And in a community this size, this isn't, you know, people that read the media and people that are sort of, you know, in the space. These are people that are actually, you know, on our roles as, you know, actively involved. And that's a huge number of people for a community this size to be involved in any organization. And we also are, in many ways, a nexus, a coalition building point within this community. So you have multiple different organizations, projects that are utilizing the resources of the IMC here locally. And I think that is fairly rare. We are a large enough community to have a multitude of different, you know, and diverse projects happening, but small enough so that people sort of learn about, you know, the IMC as a resource to be utilized and do actually use that.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's say someone listening to the show says, oh, this sounds sort of interesting, this IMC, all these people working on it, sort of a different sort of type of media from what I'm used to getting. What would they go, if they went to the website, you know, today or in recent times, and what would be on the homepage? What sort of stories would be covered? What sort of issues would be there? Like, say, in late May, like May 23rd or May 24th of 2003.
Well, there was a recent picket of Senator Winkle's office for a House bill that would provide contraceptive coverage kind of extend coverage to include contraception. And there were about 100 people who showed up to that out by his office out East Urbana. And indie media folks were out there taking photos. And so that's one of the things that is on the site.
Was that covered in the other media in town very much?
Not so much. Especially what happens is that the fact that something's happening will be covered, but the voices may not necessarily be covered. And so there are these different points of view. So there were a lot of, you know, Catholics for contraceptive coverage. You didn't out at the protest. Indie media covered that, but the mainstream news didn't.
Now, the way you would cover a story like that, or the way indie media would cover a story like that, you don't have like an assignment editor who calls up, right, "Hey, Sally, get out there with your, right, you know, VCR or whatever."
Yeah, this brings up, I think, one of the fundamental differences in indie media and perhaps most other dominant media is that it's an open system. Our website utilizes what's called an open publishing system, which means that anyone, any listener, you, me, anyone, could post a story to our website. And what this really allows, and comment on any story, what this allows for is a discourse where people will post information that they think is important to them, and people can then discuss these sorts of stories. So within the last week or two, we've had stories that have, you know, dozens and dozens of people commenting on the stories, and it's all there to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really, you know, creates a forum for discussion within the community that I think is vital to just fundamental democracy.
Well, I know you've probably both been asked this before. I think I might have asked you both this question a year ago when you were on this program then. What happens if someone comes in who wants to do an article or have something posted that's racist or misogynist or homophobic, something that violates, I think, values both of you would find contemptible? Reveals them. What happens to the open access project at that moment? Or even in a less severe thing, someone comes in with like a, I think knowing both of you well enough to know you weren't too enthusiastic about the recent invasion of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Someone comes in with a strong defense of President Bush and what a great American he is for invading Iraq, and comes in every day with another piece, wants it on that web page. What do you do in situations like that?
Well, there's a couple of different issues here. One is one of telling a story. If somebody comes in and posts something that, you know, we may personally disagree with, but, you know, is an actual, you know, story or whatever, it stays up there, absolutely.
But can you, now, like, post it, like, in the outer reaches of the website so you have to click 81 times to get there, or is it right in the middle of the thing?
There's two ways in which...
I guess I'm asking for some trade secrets here, I guess. Right.
There aren't many, actually. It's a fairly transparent system. We have a newswire, and anyone can post to that newswire. And then we have a feature section, which is made up of volunteers within the IMC that choose stories, again, sort of by consensus of that group, to feature on the website. And that's about it. So if people post content that we disagree with, it stays up there. Now, obviously, people will then comment on this content. The other issue is one of abuse, of racism, of homophobia. We do have, within our mission, a very strong mission of social and economic justice and of non-discrimination. I wouldn't even say occasionally. We quite often do get comments that are misogynist, that are racist, to stories. Sometimes we'll leave them up if we feel like, well, you know, this is just a person's opinion on something. If it's blatant abuse, we will what's called hide it, which just means that you have to actually click a button saying "Show me the hidden posts" to see it. And again, this is also all laid out. We actually have online a web use policy, and then a policy of, you know, what to do with web abuse. So it's a very transparent system. It's not so much that we have trade secrets so much as, you know, it's right out there for anyone to access and to learn about.
And for example, I wanted to, you brought up a good issue. I would bring up a similar issue that's very contentious, the Israel-Palestine situation. And I think we've had a really interesting set of discussions around that, because we've had people come in who I would say would self-describedly call themselves Zionists, pro-Israel people. We've had pro-Palestinian people come in, and we've had Clash of the Titans. And I've actually found that to be extremely exciting and interesting, because we get these kind of two points of view side by side, and they weave back and forth over the weeks, either in the public eye or in our radio show. And then, of course, on the website, I think the only times I've seen us hide things is when someone is being targeted personally. Mm-hmm. So I personally have been targeted on the website with extremely hateful, misogynist things on our website. And because I was named out and targeted in that way, I wasn't the person to remove it. But an individual who is targeted with hate and there is threats of violence behind that is then taken down, because we aren't going to allow threats of violence against Danielle, Bob, Sasha, the president, anyone. We're not going to allow that on the website.
So it's open access to the internet, but you, then you mentioned two of the other media that the IMC is connected with, the show on WEFT, the WEF show, and then the Public Eye, the monthly newspaper, which I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with. It's distributed for free, several thousand copies all around the area. And those don't have a open access, obviously. I don't think you could go to the Public Eye and say, here's my piece on how George W. Bush should be put on Mount Rushmore. I expect it to be the front page story and get it. Nor would you do that on your radio show. How do those two media work different from the open access of the website?
Sure. Well, again, these are I invite anyone who wants to get involved in any of these projects to come and get involved in the groups that are putting these things out. The groups themselves are open to the general public, so anyone can actually get involved in these. Now, obviously, you do have a limited amount of space, whether it's time on a radio show or time on our
pages.
Biweekly, or pages on our newspaper. And so those decisions, again, are made by a group of individuals who consents upon, how their processes are going to work and what they're going to put in. And actually, it's no secret that, sometimes, there's differences of opinion on these things, and the onus is on the group to come up with a way to balance out its different priorities, it's different perspectives that are brought to bear within that group. And we've seen that, again, bringing it back to the Israeli-Palestinian issue. The radio group has recently undergone a lot of discussion over some of the content of its radio show and differences of opinion about how we should be covering the issues. And mainly the answer is just, if you want to get involved in these groups, then do so. It's open to you to become a part of it.
Yeah, if you don't like something that's said, say something else.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about. And so we had someone come to us
it's all about encouraging
and say, we don't like this pro-Israel statement that's being made on your show. And we said, well, when do you have time? Come in and let's record your opinion on it and let's do a back and forth about it.
When is the show on the air?
It's Wednesdays at 5:30 p.m.
Mondays.
I'm sorry, Mondays at 5:30 p.m. on WEFT 90.1 FM.
And it's a 30-minute program.
It's a 30-minute program, and it focuses on local news primarily.
Local news, okay. There's not a whole lot of local news on radio, at least in the commercial band of the radio.
It's quite expensive to produce, and I think that's the reason why we don't see much of it. We do have a Robeson, a Fund for Independent Media, has provided us with a grant to hire a news coordinator, radio news coordinator.
Well,
and so we
terrific.
Do have someone who's basically paid to do the training to help people get over
position?
That. No, it's about 12 hours a week,
oh,
and they have open office hours, and anyone who wants to get trained in radio to produce for that show can come in and learn how to put together a show, and you it doesn't matter if you've ever touched a, microphone or mini disc recorder in your life.
Right. I'd also add that the radio shows are archived on our website, so if you can't actually tune in on Mondays at 5:30, you can actually go to the website within 24 or 48 hours and download it and listen to it off your computer.
We're talking to Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Shinawith from the Indy Media Center in Urbana-Champaign today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We taped the show a few days before going on air when we could get Sasha and Danielle into the studio, so please don't call today. Just sit back and relax and enjoy the show. We are talking about the Indy Media Center here in town, the national and global movement, its sort of vision for media, what role it plays. And also the brass tacks of how it actually operates here in town. I mean, it's really, you've got a big building now. I think it's big, but I guess it's not big enough in downtown Urbana. Big space. And if I understand it right, there's an effort to try to purchase the building. Is that right, Sasha?
We wish to purchase a permanent home for the IMC, both because of the...
I think Lincoln Square Mall is available, isn't it? Oops, am I not supposed to say that?
It's not available for sale, actually.
Oh, okay.
Just available for rent.
Would that be big enough for you, Danielle?
We're looking to purchase a building. Actually, Lincoln Square would be quite nice because
we
really want to
spot.
Have a music venue space. Well, it would be nice if Bergner's would give up that spot. Then we could rent it out to someone else, but...
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead, Sasha. We got this Urbana City Council
member
speaking.
If you get me going on city issues, we're never going to stop.
That's right. Go ahead, Sasha.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking for a permanent space where, we can house the stuff that we do locally, but also, our IMC is a nexus for a lot of national and international organizing in the media network. And so having that sort of sense of permanence and a sustainable plan, not just for here in the next couple of years, but, long term, I think really will benefit both our local IMC and the global network of IMCs.
You're trying to buy the building you're currently in, is that right? Or is that one of the options?
There's a number of options in the downtown. And actually, the current building is really not adequate for our for our needs. We would like to have an assembly space, and that requires certain things like two bathrooms, wheelchair accessible bathrooms, and certain divisions between the first floor and the second floor, a certain kind of fire. And so we've learned a lot about this in recent months, given that our venue space is temporarily shut down. But we are looking for a space that's big enough to bring a lot of people in. We have our library. And we'd like to set it up so that we could even be, selling CDs and books and things out of it and have a kind of for-profit.
You're not gonna let it cross Wright Street and get over into Champaign, though, will you, Danielle?
Well, we're looking for a place to be, and we're hoping that we can keep it in downtown Urbana, but it needs to be storefront and it needs to be within our price range. But, we just don't – there's so many times when things like the independent media movement can be fads, and they just come and go, and they have a gesture of maybe about 15 years. And we are really committed to not being that way. I think WEFT is a good example. They bought their building early on, and last year – they stopped paying their mortgage. They own their building. And WEFT is now here to stay in many ways. I mean, and so the IMC, similarly, we feel as though, unfortunately in some ways, there will be a need for non-corporate and non-governmental independent points of view through media venues. And, we need to kind of be thinking for the long term, 20, 30, 40 years out.
Well, this raises sort of fundamental issues. You're looking at pretty high expenses here, buying a building, producing a radio show, putting out a monthly newspaper, even putting up a pretty good website. These things aren't free. I see a lot of red ink forming. And so far, our discussion, I've seen no black ink on the other side of the ledger. I mean, so you've got a lot of expenses, even with volunteer labor. Even with volunteer labor, there's bills that have to be paid to make something like this work. It takes a lot of money. Where does the money show up in this magical equation?
Well, we have a membership drive and a capital campaign drive right now, and we actually found out that if we can raise our membership up to about 500 members, which we feel is very reasonable in a community like this.
How much does a member pay to become a member?
$50 a year. And then there's some sliding scale for low-income folks. But if we have about 600 members, then our operating expenses are covered. And so we're trying to achieve
$30,000 roughly. So that might do fast math.
Yeah, and then we have the capital campaign, and we've already had just a number of people come forward and generously donate to our campaign to buy a building. And right now we're looking at, we have about $30,000 in the bank, and our goal is to have $100,000 by the end of the year.
At least.
All right. Are you the head of that campaign, Sasha?
I am helping to coordinate it. I have another person who's helping me with that. And we've been talking about launching this campaign for about 6 months. And then I guess about a month and a half, 2 months ago, we really kicked it into high gear. And then with the shutting of the performance space for code violations, obviously we are now absolutely, dedicated to making this thing happen, and it is happening. And so, our goal really is to get a little bit of money from a lot of people, get some larger donors to actually commit to creating a community space. And one thing that we're looking at right now in terms of why our space doesn't fit our needs is we've noticed that there's a huge need in this community for, a larger community center, a space that is there for the multitude of different organizations and projects. And we want to provide that space. We want to actually create an arts and media and cultural center that is larger than the IMC, that houses a lot of different organizations. And so that's one of the big reasons why we're looking to buy a larger space.
Now, you've just mentioned now, and Danielle did earlier, the problem with the fire code. And now, just for some of our listeners who might not have been following this either on the IMC website or in the News Gazette, what give a little background on that, Sasha?
Sure. We had, at the beginning of May, we had an annual inspection of our space. And
scheduled or surprise?
It's an annual inspection. I think it was after our previous one was in August of 2002 of the same space. This time around, they found several issues that they were concerned about, and we were given till the end of the month to fix those. About 48 hours later, they brought in some additional inspectors, and on, I guess, maybe 3 days after the original inspection, they shut down the space. They said that it posed life safety issues, and so they didn't want the space to be used for shows any longer, for performances.
This is just a portion of our space, just to be clear.
It's the back of it.
It's just the back. There's several rooms, and it's the back room, which is kind of a more of a warehouse space where we have our music venue.
How frequently had music performances been held there?
Not just music, but we'd had microfilm fests, performances
of
various
several
sorts.
Times a week, would you say? Okay.
Almost every day of the week. It's got things going.
So it become a real
Monday's
hot
Monday's kind
spot.
Of slow, but after that it heats up.
Yeah. Okay.
It was being used
almost
every day.
Anyone could call you up, say, I'd like to use your room, and if you have space, you'd open it up to people.
We've had organizations rent the space. If it's not an IMC-sponsored event, they rent the space, and it's a pretty reasonable price, and then they will have fundraisers or host talks, et cetera, in the space.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a space that we really utilized as people wanted to use it.
So here we are. We're taping this in late May. Where does it stand right now?
Right now, it's closed down. One of the big problems is that many of the issues that were cited are far beyond both our financial ability, but more than that, we rent this space, and they're asking for things like a new sprinkler system, fixing the first floor ceiling of the entire building, things like that. That are obviously landlord issues, not for renters to have to deal with. And so we're sort of stuck without both the financial ability to pay for these things, but also just a desire necessarily to pour tens of thousands of dollars into a space that we're just renting. And I think that's also one of the reasons why, once we own a space, I think it really changes that a lot. We're actually investing in our organization when we make these upgrades.
Now, it's really in the interest of these communities, both Champaign and Urbana, to have the IMC headquartered. There's been, maybe you showed this to me, Sasha, economic data that having these sort of centers for independent artists and people in the community to come together really boosts the local economy. Isn't that true?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, there's this book that's been going around various places, Rise of the Creative Class, which talks about the synergies between technology and culture. And it's been shown in city after city. I hail from New Haven, Connecticut, which started in the mid-'80s, made a huge push to become an arts and cultural center. And you look at where it is today, and it's phenomenal as to where it was just 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it only had one direction to go.
And actually, the listeners would probably not believe this, but according to a recent survey conducted by the Arts Alliance here locally in the county, more money comes into the county as a result of arts, culture, and entertainment than sports.
Does IMC have any plans to move into sports?
Don't think so. Okay, we can start the independent soccer league or something.
Yeah.
Extreme journalism,
We're talking to Danielle Chenoweth and Sasha Meinrath from the Urbana-Champaign Indie Media Center today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is a pre-recorded show, so just sit back, listen, and enjoy it. We've got another 20 minutes to go, and I hope you're learning a lot today, as am I. Now, you've talked about the relationship that the IMC has with WEFT, WEFT, our local community radio station. How about the other media in the area, those local newspapers, the dailies, the weeklies? Mm-hmm. What sort of relationship does the IMC have with them?
Well, we have a very close relationship with the paper, as it's called, the New Alternative Weekly, which is, again, owned by the community for the most part. I mean, it's people from the IMC. It's people that you've known in and around the community. They've been incredibly supportive of the IMC. We've talked a lot at various different levels about ways to support each other. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. The paper, I guess, expand and grow into the community. And I think there's a lot of synergies there.
Now, this came and the Octopus was taken over and became the
CU City View.
CU City View, which then was folded.
It actually used to be the Optimist. Supposedly had a name that was already taken, so it was then the Octopus.
Yeah.
But the Octopus was bought out by the Saga Communications, and so it kind of became one of those trying to be a local alternative weekly, but really owned by a larger corporate parent. And then CU City View was an attempt to kind of rebirth it, failed.
That really wasn't the raciest name either.
No, and now I think we're seeing a turn back to the grassroots and trying again, I think, with a very smart business plan. So I'm hoping to see the paper really
launch itself. So that's really a first cousin to the IMC, you characterize the paper?
It's run by people whose hearts is in grassroots,
are in.
grassroots media coverage who are committed to the community and who are running this paper because of their commitment to this community, as opposed to a profit margin that they're hoping to achieve. And that changes the decision-making structure all the way up to the top, mm-hmm. in terms of what they're going to cover, how they're going to cover it.
And what about some other media locally? What else is there?
We get good coverage of our arts, culture, and entertainment kinds of things with the News Gazette. I think we secretly would like to outlive the News Gazette.
Its owner.
that's true.
Any consolation.
But we did. We also have actually done some partnerships with WILL. Mm-hmm. We had a screening of a conscientious objector documentary film at the IMC that was hosted by WILL, and we were able to kind of get to know each other. And we do produce for public access, and we've hosted one. In fact, I think you were there, Bob. We hosted a kind of forum on independent media, and we had someone from the public access channel UPTV, mm-hmm. Channel 6, people might know it as, there as well as people from Madison,
yeah,
et cetera.
Right.
So we kind of are, you know, we want to have a friendly relationship with other media forms, and we do consider ourselves distinctive from those forms. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it stands.
So, yeah, there's a family of media in the community, and IMC is part of the family.
Mm-hmm. And we don't always get along in the family, but...
Yeah, well, that's how families are, aren't they? Well, let's talk a little bit about the national movement for IMCs and the global movement, because we started with the broad view, the sort of the trigger in Seattle in 1999, and there are now 100 IMCs around the world. They're all based in communities. They're community-based media, mm-hmm. two-thirds of them outside the United States, one-third in the U.S. The ones that are in the U.S., what are the nearest IMCs to Champaign-Urbana, Urbana-Champaign?
There are, St. Louis, which actually just a couple weeks ago was raided by the police and shut down.
For having lousy website?
This was during the biodevastation protests that were happening down in St. Louis. St. Louis is the home of Monsanto, which is one of the largest producers of genetically modified organisms.
Mm-hmm.
The police raided the space preemptively, arrested a bunch of people. They've all now been released. But they shut down this community and center, of which the IMC was a part of that.
Mm.
They did it with no warning. There's now a lot of countersuits that are going to be launched because it violated, you know, pretty much every right that these individuals that were arrested have.
Mm-hmm. They're offline altogether?
I don't think they're offline, but their community space is shut down currently.
Right.
And, you know, we have a real strong solidarity with the Midwest, mm-hmm. Groups. We work very closely with Madison.
Does Madison have a pretty big one too?
It's actually pretty small in terms of the number of people involved, and I think Madison has other independent media that already kind of existed,
yeah,
so it didn't grow quite as quickly. But
right.
But we have Bloomington Normal has an independent media center, and then we have Bloomington, Indiana that is starting to get one up. And we oftentimes will kind of send ourselves out, you know, send people out as seeds to kind of help people
mm-hmm.
get their independent media centers off the ground. We kind of have offered ourselves as a support system for independent media mm-hmm. centers actually globally.
Yes.
We've sent $4,000 to Nigeria IMC. We've sent support to Palestine IMC. And I think right now we're doing some support work for the Baghdad IMC that is just getting off the ground.
So if we have listeners or people who pick this show up on the web who mm-hmm. want to find out about IMCs in their area, they don't mm-hmm. live right in the Champaign-Urbana area, they go to the UIIMC.org website. UCIMC.org website. There'll be easy links to
yes.
find out.
Yeah, there's actually on every single independent media site, with few exception, on the lower left-hand corner, there's a long list of every single city
okay.
or country that has an IMC, and you just select that. Also, mm-hmm. I suggest when people are traveling and you're about to go someplace, you know, maybe overseas, and you're going to be in Rome, well, you know, check out Rome's IMC. See what the people in Rome are doing and the grassroots organizing that's happening there. I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of times we check the weather to see how it's going to be, but I always check the Independent Media Center when I'm
mm-hmm.
traveling, and I find out about all kinds of events and issues. And then what happens, I'll be in a coffee shop, say in D.C., and I've read the D.C. IMC website, and I'll say, so what's this about, clearance of homeless people out of this park? And, all of a sudden, I'm part of the conversation. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of a it helps people to integrate themselves into a community they're visiting as well.
You're listening to Danielle Chenoweth and Sasha Meinrath today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're talking about the Independent Media Center here in Urbana-Champaign and the national and global movement. Is there some sort of formal structure for the IMCs to work together? Is it mostly an informal and ad hoc arrangement?
Yeah, there's a lot of it is in some ways ad hoc in that, you know, IMCs choose the ways in which they organize. But there are some fundamental principles that guide how IMCs operate, how we communicate. I'm actually one of the co-organizers of that's happening right now of creating a national spokes council for all IMCs in the United States. And this is all done virtually via email, via internet relay chats, which are sort of chat rooms, via a lot of, you know, computer technologies. And that's the main way in which communication happens. There is some, you know, phone calls and some face-to-face. There's the Allied Media Conference that's happening in Bowling Green, Ohio, in mid-June. A lot of IMCs are going to be represented there. There'll be a caucus there of independent media folks. But these sorts of organizational structures sort of are emergent from the needs of people participating in IMCs and in indie media generally. So systems are set up when people decide, oh, well, we really need to discuss this issue. We need a forum or a place where we can discuss this. So let's set that up.
Okay, well, let's say one of our listeners in Mattoon or Farmer City is listening to this, and they say, hey, I want to start a Farmer City IMC. Do they have to, like, apply somewhere?
Yes.
Or can they just say, hey, this is now the Farmer City IMC. I'm starting it. I've got a website, and I'm one of the team, and just do it on there without anyone's permission.
Right. Well, one of the strengths of the network is the interconnections between the IMCs and the flow of information among IMCs. There is a process of applying to become an official IMC. And there's, I think, about 30 or 40 different IMCs that are somewhere in that process. There's another anywhere between 50 and 100 IMCs that have sort of formed but haven't officially applied all over the world. And the idea is that, you know, any group of grassroots media producers can come together and say, okay, we're going to make an IMC and we're going to call it an IMC. But to really get, you know, to really get plugged into this network, I think, is very much the strength of an individual IMC, that, you know, the sum of its components are far greater. And thus, you know, it behooves anyone that is creating an IMC to get plugged into that. And if you're not plugged into that, you're not getting a lot of the, you know, the visitors from elsewhere. And I think one of the strengths is that, you know, you can see a story about some issue happening somewhere and then go to that local IMC and get more information or hear about things. And it's sort of it's a web of information connection that happens here.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. But let's say someone in Farmer City starts and says, I've got the Farmer City IMC, and they persist in this, and they have their website, fcimc.org. Will they eventually get a knock on the door from, like, some lawyers from some group saying, wait a second, you're not allowed to be an IMC? Or can anyone do that technically?
I doubt the Independent Media Center is trademarked as a title.
Okay. Yeah. Well, could someone trademark it then and come and knock on your door and say, hey, we're now IMC.org, you know?
They'd be hard-pressed given the precedence and given the prior use to do that. Obviously, if somebody wants to hit us
with a social pressure, the kind of social pressure that individual would receive is quite phenomenal. And I think that actually it's telling that when our Independent Media Center here was experiencing, you know, problems, and part of it was shut down because of code violations, we immediately got dozens and dozens of emails from both coasts and, you know, lawyers and people calling us saying, how can we help? We're here. How can we help? What's going on?
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's this really strong solidarity network throughout the world. It's kind of, I don't think anybody actually has their heads around it. I haven't seen a dissertation yet about this kind of phenomenal
music. Sasha, are you listening?
Oh, yeah.
Although I'm sure Sasha is about to write it, probably under your tutelage. But it's quite amazing what happens when the whole force of this kind of virtually based community is put towards a particular end, like, you know, our little independent media center with the back room that got shut down all of a sudden becomes mm-hmm. this major conversation, you know, amongst mm-hmm. the global network folks.
Now, you get a chance to assess the traffic you get to the website. Do you get I'm really a novice at this, so this might be a dumb question, but I'm glad to know there are probably lots of listeners who ask a similarly dumb question. Mm-hmm. Can you tell how many of the hit visits come from the area, how many come from Israel, how many come from Germany or anything? Is that something you can tell if you want to?
We can tell some of that. We don't do things like log IP addresses, so it's anonymous usage of the site. We do check sometimes referrals, like where people came from. And so we can sort of tell, generally speaking, kind of where people are coming from. We get anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 unique visitors a day to the site.
That's tremendous.
It's quite tremendous.
I know enough about that increase too.
I don't. The only way I can explain it is the CU City View shutting down. Mm-hmm. I mean, our website is in bad need of redesign, and you're looking at the woman who's supposed to do it, and I don't have time. But you know, when it's not even that usable, and still we have quite a bit of people coming through. You know, I think that every single time we see some vital kind of venue for an independent voice shut down, all of a sudden there's this swelling of need to get access to stories that just aren't, you know, being told in the mainstream press.
And we do see a surge anytime there's, say, a large, like February 15th, when there was the global protests mm-hmm. against war in Iraq. We saw a huge surge of usage of our website. Mm-hmm. And you know, post September 11th, right when that was happening, we again saw a huge surge in the usage of our site. And I think that really reflects a desire on the part of, you know, a general populace to have information that they're not getting from other news sources.
Yeah.
And that's where I think our strength lies.
The Global Indie Media Network has kind of picked up a couple of our stories in the last 3 or 4 months. And that's when all of a sudden they're putting a link from the Global Indie Media site to our site mm-hmm. about, say, references for alternative points of view on the war in Iraq. I know Sasha posted that article. And before you knew it, we were being mm-hmm. I mean, the server was slowing down because we had so many people coming in and getting access to those references.
You guys are going to have to get a bigger server, do you think?
We need more bandwidth.
Yesterday.
Like, we actually can't put up a lot of information in terms of, like, streaming audio, streaming video, mm-hmm. because we don't have the resources to house it. And that's, you know, this is, again, a situation where we've completely outgrown the resources that we have available, and we need to find some way to increase that to meet the demand.
And we're pursuing grants on that in that level. So,
no, you're talking. You know, you're trying to get people to come down and help with volunteer labor. You're trying to get donations and grants from foundations.
Absolutely,
Danielle, you're on the city council in Urbana. I think well known around town in that capacity. Are there things that city governments, county governments, state governments, federal governments, policies that people could work toward that would enable indie media centers, make them more successful, make this type of media more prominent in our society? Are there political options people should be concerned with too?
Well, it's a little bit of a tricky situation because on the one hand, we don't want any, like, we don't take ads for the public eye. We don't necessarily want a strong link to government expectations. And so we have to be careful about that. One thing that I think locally would be very exciting if our government would get on board with this is that one of the many programs out of the IMC is a wireless network, a community wireless network in downtown Urbana. And mm-hmm. one of the things that we've talked about is the possibility of the city supporting that, either by doing as little as giving some staff time and putting one of the various antennas on top of the city building to potentially partnering with some granting organizations to establish a seed fund to do a proof of concept. So that could happen. I think the other thing is that oftentimes government entities are really looking at tax base, and what they forget about is quality of life issues, livability issues, access to arts and culture and entertainment, and what that does in terms of retaining graduate students in the air, retaining people. And I think our city does understand to a large degree the importance of that and really supports the IMC. I mean, you go downtown and there are some days where the whole place is dead, except there's a line out the IMC door of mostly teenagers because we're the only all ages venue in this area, and get down the line to get into the IMC. And so the city people are saying, what the heck's going on? What are you doing? Well, you know, we don't serve booze, and we, you know, and we're all ages, and we've got these interesting You know, it's not canned stuff that we're doing at the IMC.
Yeah.
And so I think they see that and say, wow, there's foot traffic in our downtown. There's arts and culture happening, and this is something that we want to support.
Let's talk about this Wi-Fi network, because I've heard about this, and it's really quite fascinating. This is an IMC motivator, instigated move. Explain that, Sasha. I know you're Mr. Wi-Fi.
Right, yeah. Much like the IMC started in Danielle's living room, Wi-Fi really started in mine.
Your living room?
Yeah, it kind of looked like a board.
I thought you guys lived in the same house.
Well, now we live in the same house. Okay. We used not to. Yeah, okay. I've got all kinds of – I have some strange contraption on the top of my house that looks like a Pringles can that's connected to some, you know, like weird genius, you know, experiment in the attic.
Yeah, we've gone from an idea 2 years ago, well, now closer to 3 years ago, to actually implementing a prototype network that shares bandwidth across a community and that allows for anyone to get online. I mean, we're talking about...
And it's, we had Kristen Sandvig on the show just the week before this is being aired. He talks a lot about the Wi-Fi technology. Mm-hmm. And this is so people can get broadband access...
to the internet.
For free, basically? I mean,
for pretty much free.
That's what we have at our house.
Yeah.
And if you're within the network area.
Right.
And right now it's just in the heart of downtown.
It's right now there's...
Does it extend to my house?
Not yet.
Okay. I didn't think so. Let me know when.
But we're trying. We're reaching out in that direction.
The system utilizes, for the most part, off-the-shelf technology, stuff you can get at Best Buy or, you know, any of these sort of large stores.
Pringles cans. I wasn't kidding about that. That's actually...
That was an earlier generation.
Oh, okay.
We built antennas out of Pringles cans.
Yeah, this seems like an extraordinary service because it's not really that expensive.
No.
No, not at all.
And it's sort of a classic public good. Then everyone can share in it. There are tremendous benefits. Yeah. But there are... I mean, there's a reason why governments aren't doing this around the country, though, I would imagine.
Why? It could be why isn't it a municipal
Where's the cynic
utility?
In you, Danielle Chenoweth?
I have very little of that. Thank you
no,
very much.
No, but where's the honest recognition of how power works in our society? Let's put it.
Well, the thing is that I feel in some ways that it's just backwards thinking, because if you think about what are roads, they connect people. What are sewers? It connects things. Well, what is internet? It connects people.
Yeah.
I feel like it very much could be the case with some visionaries and some people who have spine and are willing to take risks to create municipal utilities out of wireless.
And what we have with this wireless system, this is not just cutting edge technology. This is the bleeding edge of wireless community networking. There is, as far as we can tell, there's no system that exists in the entire world like this. We get emails every week from people all over the nation, from all over Europe, from Australia, from all over the world, asking us, how are you doing this? Can we see the software? How does it work? How does it all set up? And that's happening right here, right now. And we have a working network. You know,
The point I was getting to earlier, because we're aware of this, our listeners heard about last week too, is that there are currently companies that make a lot of money selling this service, and you're trying to arrange it to give it to them equal or superior service for free or at almost no cost. People are charging $40, $50, $60 a month for the same.
There's precedent for this. There was a FreeNet movement. PrairieNet is part of that movement to allow very low-cost access to the internet in the attempt to kind of prevent a further digital divide. And I think wireless is the next stage in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, communities have an opportunity right now to build, you know, a community network at almost no cost.
Let's say someone's listening to the show is turned on. Say, this sounds like a really cool thing, this Urbana-Champaign IMC. Where do they go if they want to get involved, learn more?
They can come to our community center at 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana.
Is there a weekly meeting or anything that show up time?
There's multiple weekly meetings. The main steering group meeting happens on Wednesday evenings.
Okay, well, thank you. I want to thank Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Chenoweth for joining me today. Media Matters. See you next week.